This is a production of Cornell University.
The time is 4:45. All representatives, please take your seats. We're going to be starting the meeting here. John, if you could attempt to read the roll. I know you didn't print it out, but let's do it. Excuse. Mariah, you're excused for the time being.
Joseph Anderson.
Here.
Morgan Baker.
Here.
Colin Bendick.
Here.
Aramai Cass.
Here.
Jenna Triple Garrett. John Clancy.
Not excused.
Osai Arapa, Jacob Fike.
He's excused. He's 15 minutes late.
Masa Haddad.
Here.
Catherine Huang.
Here.
Julia Kroll.
Here.
Yifan Lee.
Here.
Gavin Martin.
Here.
Nick Matolka.
Here.
Liam Ordonez. Indigo Pavlov.
Excuse.
Tomas Raymond.
Here.
Lucas Smith.
Here.
William Soloviva.
Here.
Sarah Sun.
Here.
Noah Watson.
Here.
Ryan Weintraub.
Here.
Arabelle Ledoux.
Here.
Celine Xu.
Here.
Valentina Xu.
Here.
Jacob Youngblood.
Here.
Yuhan Wong.
Here.
John's here as well.
John?
Yeah, just.
Perfect. Thank you. So we're going to start in our presentations. I'm going to give the floor to Dean of the Faculty, Charlie Van Loan, and undergraduate student lecture trustee, Jay Wonson. So if you just want to come up. They're going to talk about university budgeting and an ad hoc committee that they're sitting on. So please give them your attention. If you have questions that come up in the presentation, flag me down. I'll put you on the speakers list. You both have to, like, 5:05-ish.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for having me come along with J1. So, the university has a huge budget, right? It's $2 billion. And the question is, what comes in and how is it distributed? So take undergraduate tuition dollars, for example. It's distributed among the colleges according to how much they teach and how many students they enroll and so on. So about 10 years ago, it's been a transition. The budget has gotten more formulaic. In other words, there are real recipes out there that determine how some of the dollars go. It's not entirely formulaic, but it has that component to it. Understanding how things work is very important. In fact, my experience is that there's a real shortage of people, staff, students, administrators, there's a shortage of people who understand both the budget and the academic forces at work that are caused by the budget. So we created a committee whose purpose actually is to produce a user's guide for the Cornell budget, but in lay terms. And I include myself in that. I attend lots of meetings where budget aspects are presented, and I usually get lost for 30 seconds. I'm really no ahead with that. And we need people to understand how these things work. So for example, we visited the GPSA. And we said, what are some of the mysteries of the budget concerns that you might have? So, you know, how is the number of TAs determined? How is their stipend determined? You're an MM student in computer science. You take an entrepreneur course in the business school. Dollars flow. Well, how do those dollars flow? This is real important because we want to, we have lots of colleges here, we want students to be at Jefferson and take courses all over the place, but there are financial ramifications of that. And we get pretty nervous if the budgetary formulas, so to speak, discourage teaching, say, general courses for the non-technical students and so on. We visited the employee assembly, and a sample question. How does parking work? Who pays for parking? I'm Americus. I get free parking. Who pays for that? just some of these questions are curiosity driven, others are pretty pointed. Another question you got in the beginning, I might have the dates wrong, but say we want to be carbon neutral by 2035. But why isn't it 2034? Well, there's probably some economic argument there that argues against them. So all over the place are these issues, and if we want to have informed discussions about them and really exercise shared governance, we need to be educated about these things. So day one will help and maybe bring up some of the, will bring up some of the issues that might be resonant in the undergraduate population. And then we want to hear from you. Again, what are the big mysteries out there? What would you like to understand better in terms of how the dollars flow around here?
Matt, thanks so much for having us here. It feels just like home. as Carla mentioned, we have a committee set up to sort of explain how university finances in layman's terms. So everyone, not just students, faculty, but everyone at Cornell can sort of understand how most of Cornell's financial flows work. So where tuition goes, how does our endowment work, and how does our endowment spending policies work. So some of the questions that you might have is, and like this might come up in essay discussions too, is what is the endowment and what form is the endowment in, and how much money do we spend from the returns on the endowment? So when you have discussions about maybe divestment, if it comes up through the essay, I think it's very important for everyone to be knowledgeable about how financing actually works, so we can have a meaningful discussion about it and contribute in a way that would actually impact how the university functions. So, in other questions you might have is how does the level of tuition increases work every year, and how is that rate set, and how does financial aid policies work, and how does it work for international versus domestic students. So, we just want to hear from you about what questions you might have, so we can just jot them down, and when our committee comes to a conclusion, we have a final report. We'll make sure to answer those questions, and you can check back in to see if we've answered all of those. So, yeah, this is really a big session for just gathering your feedback, so we would love to hear from you.
Great, thank you. So, essay members, if you have questions that this committee would want to address, like read the budget, like please just raise your hand. I'll get you on the speakers list. Right now, I only have one person. So, Brian, kick it off.
Yeah, thank you both for being here. I think this is a really fantastic thing. I know that very few people know about the Cornell budget. Not sure how many people are interested. I know I am, but definitely something that would be really helpful is to looking at the money's coming in, what's coming out, and how it impacts the essay and play a role in that. I also, one of the things that I'd love to learn a little bit more about and I hope we can investigate is many different departments within student camps, like paid service charges, essentially, which actually represents a fairly significant portion, upwards of 10-15% of their projects, back to Cornell for various services or to different departments. I'm not entirely sure how that works, but I'd love to learn a little bit more about that. And I think just get a better sense of where cross-sector budgets are allocated and how that works. And, non-representative departments, which are often friends, those departments at the university, where those projects come out of, and is it done in a similar way to how the essay functions? This is not maybe we've used historically, we want to continue doing what we're doing, so this is not maybe we continue to be in the future, or is there some other way that's going to get out of this? Thanks.
Next, I have Yuhan.
Thank you for being here, and I do have questions regarding financial aid. Like Jay just mentioned, I have questions about how financial aid works in general, how's the money coming from, where's the pool, and how applicants are selected.
Again, just a little bit about that. So, for example, the tuition dollars, right off the top, about a third. It is a pull down for financial aid, and that's distributed among the colleges according to how many students there are out there and so on. But also, money comes in from the endowment as well for that and gifts. So, those are the kinds of things that we would like to clarify. Not necessarily quantify down to the last penny, but just enough so that we understand how that happens. And if, for example, you decide to take instead of 0.35 of income into it, $1, but that 0.36, okay, then what are the ramifications of that? And as Jay Warren mentioned, right now, individuals are trying to figure out what the tuition increase will be next year. So we don't necessarily have to know exactly what it will be, but if it's 3.4, what if it was 3.3? What could you not do if it was 3.3? What extra things could you do if it's 3.6? Those are the kinds of differential questions I think are worth answering. Everything is trade-offs. Everything is trade-offs. You know, for example, computer science has to pay about CIS has to pay about $150,000 a year to heat and gauge all. Well, if we turn the thermostat down 1 degree, we'll get, what do we do with that extra money? Okay. Or if Cal decides to get more out-of-state students relative to in-state students, what are the ramifications of that? Everything is trade-offs. And when we walk into these discussions where money is an issue, we need full appreciation of that. That if we do more of X, it means less of Y. And understanding those trade-offs, I think, is really important if you want to advance your cause, so to speak.
Great. Masa.
Hi. Thank you for coming. I think you mentioned TEs in the debate. We also look into RAs and how, if my students pay for housing, you just turn it back over to the RA today, and how is that calculated, let's say? And also for international students who are RAs, well, personally, I am an athlete, I am an RA. I only get paid $500 a semester, but because of my visa restrictions, I only get to work 20 hours a week. And so international students have another job, and how that.
So these are things inside the Ryan's corner of the university, basically, and rules especially for international students that might affect things.
Tomas.
Yeah, my concern about that is just kind of sorry about that. That being said, I guess my concerns surrounding the fact that for students on financial aid, things like outside scholarships, things like the free housing that RAs get just reduces the financial aid, which then disproportionately affects low-income students for doing the same job. And so also, my understanding is that compared to other IDs, our operating budget depends more upon things like revenue, like the tuition as opposed to our endowment, and why is that?
Yeah, so I think you bring up a good point, several good points here. One of which is the kind of ballpark comparison with peer institutions and how we might get it. So we're interesting because we're, you know, half state and half private and so on. But those are really good points.
Great, Sarah.
So we're still going to follow up on the rule question, which is this initiative, is that just kind of being applied? And then I had some more questions for what's the rationale behind having some issues on the inside of the RVs? And then,
this is a little slower and louder. Sorry, I'm trying to get
So I have three questions. First is admissions to Cornell worldwide. Second question is, what's the rationale for some locations only accepting BRBs? And the question is, why is the money?
BRBs.
Big red dwarfs.
Can I just take the third question and then
why is the money?
Why is the money? Very good question. So Cornell doesn't have any applied admissions policy for domestic students, not the case for international students, and all the reasons why we don't get into like a whole discussion, but it's a strategic decision by the university. That's just how it is right now. And with BRBs, so how Cornell's dining model or any of the university service centers work is that they have a cost recovery model. So basically Cornell dining, housing, these different functions, so they kind of operate to recover their costs. So one doesn't go outside of the system. So how that structure is how Cornell dining sees fit to run the university so they can be every year or have a sustainable way of operating their facilities. So that's kind of how it is. But why certain locations can only accept BRBs, that's a much different conversation to have. Cornell dining is basically the cost recovery. And your third question was about. Sorry,
laundry.
That's also a different, so that's also a posture. So right now, how it's set up is it's kind of similar to printing, where students get charged for printing, that money goes back into buying papers, hiring the workforce that are going to be, and that's the same case for all laundry too, but that's also within my umbrella, so we'll get to that and get to some of those information. I know there are certain members on the essay who are looking into it too. So yeah, so if you want to find out more about it, we can share.
Moving on to the second speakers list, if no one else who hasn't talked wants to talk, I'll continue to take people for the first speakers list, but I have Brian again.
Yeah, definitely. So a few of the things that just came out of the discussion, love to learn a little bit more about how formal it is with depreciation of physical assets. You know, for example, housing costs, right? Does that, or what we pay in housing is part of that going to the depreciation of the buildings? Just be cool a little bit more about that. And also, I was looking at the recent, I think it might be summer, but there's some recent budget release that showed that we were operating at a loss, but I was comfortable with that. But it also mentioned that a very significant portion of our revenues are actually coming in from medical services in a while. And so I'd love to know a little bit more about that, what you know, the breakdown of the third. I think it really is the money coming in from education services. Is that an opportunity for us to grow revenues to make the entire budget larger? One other thing I wanted to, and this, I guess this is more of a question towards Joe, but do we have, can we like hold budgets for anything under student benefits like in the law?
That's written in the charter, but words of the charter are different than something else. So that's a concept that we can discuss, but not a method that I would consider in a punitive way. What? Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, the charter is written in a very punitive mindset that like puts us in an antithesis to the university. But there are, you know, through relationship building that we could, if that's an avenue that you want to explore, I'm happy to assist you in any way.
Or out of interest.
Out of interest? That would be a different conversation. Yeah. Okay. You got everything else to say.
You brought up an interesting point. You know, let's use the word firewall. So, for example, $600 million roughly comes in for research, external NSF, things like that. And we have tuition dollars, and you want to sort of make sure that, like, undergraduates are not subsidizing research and vice versa. So, how do you reason about that? Another tension is the Cornell tax. How do we insulate that budget from this one? And it gets complicated real quick, but we have to understand those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Yeah, and based on my current understanding, the money from the physician's organization doesn't necessarily, it doesn't come into the Ithaca budget. So while Cornell Medicine might work independently of that, and with Cornell Tech, a lot of where we are getting funding from is it's new donations. So it's not necessarily like donations that were taken away from the Ithaca campus, but it was like, because we're expanding our presence in New York City, we could get more support from our donors there. So that's where the funding's coming from. And I think you had another question about Cornell's current finances. So Cornell's current finances are in healthy condition. So whenever the university decides to use more money to invest in new programs or new facilities, I think like temporarily happen and not ask the lender to Cornell accounting as some people working there might be, but that's my understanding that when Cornell expands into new areas, we can have sudden drops in our financial flows, and that might temporarily affect our finances. But as EDP, Lisa Bala said, we're in
One more thing is the depreciation issue. I'm just wondering about that. If you have any additional, like that's something that you need to look into in the right direction.
Again, that's something that we'll make note of. You made note of your comment there and we'll follow up.
Thank you.
Last person I have is Tomas.
Just follow up Sarah's question about being aligned. I understand you are in the partial public learning for my parents, but is it having to maintain the ratio of state and state students inherently not being aligned? And so I guess it's just a concern for me with transparency. Because we're aware that that ratio needs to exist, but I don't think it's transparent any form of relationship.
That's a good point.
Perfect. I don't have anyone else on our speakers list, but if assembly members have stuff that comes to their mind that they want to continue to explore, you all have J1's email, most likely, Charlie's email. If you want to send it through me, I can send it up to them to continue communicating. But I'm really excited to see this. Yeah, thanks so much for coming. Before we head into the presentation from the Health and Wellness Committee and Nick, I'm going to ask the Assembly to adopt some amendments to the agenda today. So between the announcements and the appointments, I want to insert a small section of Business of the Day for Resolution 14 that's in the packet, and then in the Byline Report section, insert Class Councils and Senior Days. Do I have someone who's willing to... I need that to be so moved.
So moved.
So moved. Do I have a second? Seeing a second. All in favor, please raise your hand or placard. Thank you to the Assembly. We don't need to count Gavin. Thank you. Gavin, Debbie's not here, so Gavin is filling in as my temporary parliamentarian today, fulfilling his dream that he now gets to...
Thank you, everyone.
So, Nick, are you in Health and Wellness ready?
Yes.
Perfect.
Okay,
there's a projector. Yeah, it's behind the table. So, Nick will be setting up. And as they set up, please take a look over the November 14th minutes so we don't have to waste time going into those. Also, if you read over the minutes, please take some time also to read the new statement that the Student Assembly Executive Committee crafted, specifically Kat and Colin. They'll be presenting it. The one that's printed in the packet is a previous version, so please ignore that. The one that is on its loose piece of paper, that is the current one. So, looks like they're going to get ready here, so give your full undivided attention to that as they present. Go for it. You can stand and present.
So I'm so excited to introduce the Health and Wellness Committee and we're going to give you some information and ask for some feedback. So I'm going to take it. So today's presentation is about one of the most kind of relevant high models we have on campus is that for now, the universities in the university webpage says that when a student has more than two finals in 24-hour period of time during final week, faculty members are encouraged, or strongly encouraged, to grant a bigger exams for students. Final exams usually have 3 periods of time. Usually happen either on 9 a.m. in the morning, 2 p.m. On the afternoon, or 7 p.m. evening. But we believe that there's some problems with our current system. So our current policy only lasts 24 hours, which means, let's say, you have a friend who's unfortunately have a schedule, say, she has a final on 2 p.m., 7 p.m., and she has another final 2 p.m. the second day, which does not qualify for the 24-hour period, but still psychologically as training as you know you have 3 finals in 24 hours. This is just one small example that all kinds of scenarios that doesn't qualify by the 24-hour policy we have right now. And we believe that we can improve that by extending that 24-hour period time to 30 hours.
Hi everyone, my name is Brew. I'm on the Health and Wellness Committee, and we're super excited to review on this. In
just in general, our final exam also has a lot to do with mental health, physical health in terms of stress during final season. So this is one of the ones running platforms, and so we picked up on that and wanted to work with them to kind of investigate if this was something that could be rectified. So we have all this anecdotal evidence, and we wanted to cast out a study. Right at the end, we sent out a brief survey. We received approximately 150 responses in less than a 24-hour period before our meeting with Dean Manlon. It was like all very last minute. But regardless of the small sample size, we did get a decent amount of responses. The question we asked was, we kind of described the current policy, and we asked what their thoughts were on increasing the policy to a 30-hour window, which would, in essence, deal with all of these problems with having three exams within kind of a 24-hour period, but ending right before the 24 hours elapses. So just to go over some of the brief results, the vast majority of students that we surveyed supported the initiative to increase the number to 30 hours. One said that they had no opinion, and two did not support the initiative, mostly for reasons related to the fact that they thought that the SA should focus on things that were more important. So that's kind of the overview of the results. We have some comments as well, just to give you some of the examples of why people felt the way that they did about this initiative. The first and biggest one is that current policy does not adequately support student mental health or academic performance. I realize that this starts with super small, so I'm going to read through it real quick. One comment said that I have personally witnessed two separate stress-related mental breakdowns with close friends who have had three exams in 2 days. It's too much. We're human beings, and the university's arbitrary policies are pushing us beyond our breaking point. Second comment, the amount of stress that this institution places on students is already enormous. I've seen students, classmates whose grades fail because they have ridiculous exam schedules that did not allow them at all to showcase their efforts and knowledge in the class because of their incredible and incredibly dense exam schedules and the negative mental and cognitive consequences that result from that. The 24-hour policy will be extremely damaging to the mental health and academic achievements of students and should definitely be reduced at least 30 hours. And finally, the current policy creates a stressful and unproductive work environment for students. We should have the opportunity to have that kind of study with all examinations equally rather than prioritizing subjects over others as the current policy often forces us to do. So the general consensus is that current policy both prevents good mental health practices during final exam season and also prevents peak performance on those exams. Another concern that was around is that current policy doesn't really consider the need to speak between exams. Part of the reason for that, that we included this on here is because we talked a little bit about why this policy needs to differ maybe from what other peer institutions already have, but one of the comments suggested that Cornell students who forget that their final exams are 2.5 to 3 hours apiece, and the 24-hour exam policy does not take into account that students actually want to sleep at the time of the interview, they do well on their exams, and they said that it really should be 3+ exams in 48 hours, which is a whole different conversation, but basically, the point is, you can't take these exams back to back to back. And finally, the current policy doesn't mandate that professors have to schedule makeups, but having this window in the written policy and having it not include that third exam makes it less likely that they will. One comment said that if that person had this happening to them one semester, that their professors were pretty willing to give them an extension, but they had other professors that were unlikely to do that. Another comment said that they had a lot of professors who are generally awful about accommodating students when it comes to finals. So we recognize that we can't necessarily do it. It would be difficult to force professors to do this, but having it in policy at least provides a little bit more incentive that the university supports and encourages this kind of practice.
Hi, my name is Alexa. I'm also a member of the Law Review Committee. I'm just going to wrap up the summary of these questions for a
bit. If you're going the wrong way, keep on.
So, the last topic that was pretty much brought up by the survey was tight exam schedules prevent students from enjoying a diverse and enriching academic experience, which is supposed to be what Cornell's all about. And the students specifically said, as a grad student, limited and sparse amounts of my undergrad course allowed me to provide and focus on critical thinking, as well as more future professional and academic endeavors. So that was more of like the positive side of how it would be if exams were more spread out, which is kind of also what we're going to do with this 30-hour extension. So what we've done so far
this policy change going. You hired a match with Dr. Long, who was here just a few minutes ago. We had a pretty productive conversation about the final exam study role, just in general. He seemed really open to our ideas, but he also suggested alternative solutions for the data stress for the finals, such as shortening final exam times to 2 hours instead of 2.5 hours, which we didn't know there was a possibility to be honest, but I think we obviously had a time to do it. We also want to get the virtual immersion simulation to schedule the final exams under this new policy, because if it were to cause a lot of conflict, then obviously it would be very productive. But right now, the registrar department is very overwhelmed and doesn't really want to take on this new project. And we also, moving forward, want to get more student attention to this topic, perhaps take a bigger survey, maybe put an article on the summer and the essay resolution.
This is just kind of an overview of the work that we've done so far and getting of like a temperature reading on how students feel about it. So in terms of like how to actually get this done, I'm not too familiar with like the bureaucratic procedures, but we would love some suggestions as to like how to build more attention around the center. It seems like it would be a relatively like small change to make, but if it requires a bit more hoops to jump through, we would love some suggestions as to how to proceed.
Great, thank you so much. So again, I'm taking a speakers list. I have someone already. Please raise your hand if you can be honest. My first question is from me. What did the three people say were the more important issues? Are they, because I'm interested.
They didn't give any examples. They were like, this seems like it only affects 1% of Cornell's population. Mm-hmm. And so where did you pull that microphone? But yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's fine, because I think this is an important issue. So I'll start with Mariah.
So I guess my first question is, so I was the chair of the Academic Policy Committee last year, and this is an academic policy, so I guess I'm curious, like, why that group was a thing.
So there's the clarification. Yeah.
So this issue was brought up during the last cabinet meeting, so they're doing collaborative work with AT schools.
And then, so my next question is, Rasha talked about that was in the context of not wanting to end classes so late, for like internship reasons and just like because we don't want to be here later than we need to, and one of the suggestions that was brought up was actually adding a final exam time slot, and so how do you plan on balancing this policy with the fact that this now means that our final exam schedule will probably be a little bit longer, that we'll have to stay here later, not only in December, but also in May, which makes it hard for, there were concerns about people who wanted to get internships that started a little bit early, and like, when you make it so that like, you don't have so many finals, like, bunched up together, the week becomes longer. And one thing that Dean generally mentioned was that, like, for example, at Columbia, they actually have 4 exam time slots throughout the day, and he suggested that as an option for wanting to end earlier. And so I'm rambling a little bit, but, like, yeah, mm-hmm. I guess I see the benefits of this and all, but how would you kind of balance that with the fact that you also don't want to stay here longer than you need to?
Thank you for the question. And firstly, I definitely want to point out is by changing the policy, we definitely will not avoid more than 2 finals in 30 hours of time. This will happen because, so I talked to the registrar, and so the like black box logic that registrar set up in all the final exam schedules is that it will based on pretty low data. And they run an algorithm developed by our fellow faculty members from CS problems, and they will see find the optimal solution that minimizes the conflicts. The problem is that requested to release the schedule like well before the actual period. But when people enter the actual period, things change drastically, And according to the conversation, the people in the restaurant actually will say, you know, maybe during the simulation you only have 200 within 20 minutes. But after the ad drop, that will increase to 200. The first thing we definitely want to make sure is that the thing will not like be 100% perfect for everyone. But the thing we are doing is minimize the like the general conflict for everyone. And you mentioned that, you know, people don't want to stay here like too long. But the problem is that I believe we want to increase a natural time slot for exams. First, that's the main conversation that we should go through. And I believe right now we only have 3 time slots, and that's already kind of overwhelming. And I believe right now, unless we can make some changes on the exam time, for example, shorten the time from 2.5 hours to 2 hours, that change probably will not be too effective to mental health students. That's my opinion, but that's definitely some conversation we can have in the future.
I'm not sure, I didn't really hear my question get answered. I guess I'm wondering, like, how do you plan on balancing? Like, do you expect, because from what I'm hearing, it sounds like this will maybe kind of increase the week, because now, like, the times that you can take exams are less frequently, right, because of the 3 hours. And so I guess what I'm asking is, like, how do you plan on balancing that with the fact that, like, none of us want to stay here late?
So I will jump in here and say that the university calendar approval process is one that does that happens on a, I forget what year cycle basis, I want to say 5, but don't quote me. It's in the charter, and so our university calendar is approved 5 years out for the next 5 years, and so if this policy does change that, there is no way to change that calendar until a new calendar review process increases. So this policy will just, that what Johan was saying was that the registrar's office will just work and find ways to make sure that that doesn't occur.
Well, right, but like long term, like if this is an issue now.
Long term, the university calendar process would take this into consideration when constructing the new one. Yeah.
So I think that that's my concern.
Oh, okay.
Like when that review process happens, I'm thinking like,
yeah.
The consensus would be that we need more time.
Yeah, possibly.
And so, okay, I don't.
I have to run out. Just to kind of answer that, yes, we're not pushing for a change to like limited practice time or like adding extra week of practice, which like that idea is not pushing to look down the road, but at the moment it's more getting professors is more, I guess, like willing to work around some of the schedules, and it's like really voluntary, like when someone has an internship and has to leave early and wants to start the finals, that's on them, but it's like when it doesn't have that issue and wants to kind of give themselves a little bit more room to maybe bring in the choices, that's we want to create that like space a little bit more for those people as opposed to just like making a huge change to the schedule.
Thank you. Masa.
Yes.
I have a lot of people on the speakers list, so if you want to connect with Mariah offline, I would really highly suggest that. Yeah, Masa. Okay, wonderful. Thank you. Jacob Youngblood.
So I understand this is pertaining specifically to clients, but I was wondering if there's a possibility to use that to maybe freelance driver or not on this. Connect your card up to your freelance at the end of the day and get it on the pool. So I don't know if that's.
Yes, so for Philip, that's the conversation that I should have, but I haven't started yet. But I feel like one thing pretty tricky about Philip is that when you're talking about you have more than 2 prisons within 24 hours period of time, usually what's happening is you have, you know, 1 average 5, 1 average 7, but you also have 1 in class prisons. Which is, I believe, that's the time when professors are like less reluctant to do, you know, move around. So I believe that's definitely a conversation you should have, but that's a little bit harder to achieve compared to the 3 hours of personal needs.
Thank you. Ozai. Can you use a microphone, please? Okay, thank you. Valentina.
It is listed on the website, but I just want to confirm that final exams also including the projects and final deliverables.
No, we are not talking about taking exams for projects. We are not taking that at all.
Wait, so on the website it does list
It does list like the deadlines for those. On the website, it does list the website, the deadline for the projects and the final deliverables and papers. So that is not taken into consideration as well.
That is not taken into consideration.
Okay, Brian. Do you have anything?
No, I wasn't.
Oh, my temporary commentary.
No, you did a little.
It's okay. Anyone else want to be on the speakers list? Seeing no one else, obviously, please connect if you have Valentina. I know it has connected to APC, so please stay in connection. But thank you so much for presenting. We really appreciate it. We're going to move into announcements chat.
We have Sprint on Sunday. Please come. It's at noon.
If you want to talk to me, well, you have classes until Tuesday. And if you're interested in talking about free laundry, which apparently many of you are, Sprint is a great time to discuss those things. Come to Sprint. Okay, Mariah will talk about something else right now, but now it's also Mariah for a special project report.
So, I have two announcements. The first is, yes, we did approve a special project for the Dissection as a Clone Color Coalition, which is trying wants to do a winter clothing pop-up for, winter clothing, and they were requesting a grant, we approved a grant, discussion. I don't know if you have any thoughts. 1,000. And then my second announcement is if anybody who hasn't liked my message in the Slack wants to participate in our news exchange, please let me know now so that we can find your videos during my live workshop.
Thank you, Mariah.
Yes, you're
welcome. I'm so excited. Full study.
So we have Joe with transition number 14 again because we did it the last time.
Hi everyone. Welcome. Same bad place, same bad time, same bad speaker. Resolution 14 again. Ran over it last time. Hopefully, if you had questions.
It's at the end of the packet, third last page.
Yep, so obviously making some changes, doing some stuff, explained it last meeting. If you have questions, I didn't receive any questions, so we're doing what it means. But, you know, it kind of does what it says in the resolution, very self-explanatory, and we'll take questions. I have my nominee here today, so we will do it right after this, and you will choose to approve it, which I hope you do because it's a really good idea.
Motion to approve.
Okay. Okay. Do you have to vote on this?
Yeah.
Okay. Vote to approve.
No, just go.
Literally, okay. All in favor? Raise your flag or your hand. Thank you, Gavin. Okay. 24-0-1. This is the
show. No, I didn't count myself.
Okay.
That's 4-0-2.
24-0-2. Thank you.
What did I do?
And then
I didn't know box. Okay, now it's my confirmation. Or the person's going to be leading the office confirmation. So, Adi, if you just want to sit at the table. So, this is Adi. You can explain a little bit. You can explain a little bit about yourself, what major, who you are, what you do, why this interests you, and I hope the assembly confirms.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Adi Mufarno. I'm a sophomore studying policy analysis and management. Originally from New Jersey. I've had the opportunity to have some experience working in the federal level of government and sort of met Joe earlier this year, beginning the end of last year, being an RA at Sevilla, and he brought this opportunity, which would be something I've been thinking about in terms of what Cornell can expand on. This past summer in DC, I was able to speak to the Federal Relations Office generalized on family students. So we brought this opportunity and it would be a great opportunity for Cornell to develop as well as position efforts at NSA.
Anyone have any questions? Oh, no one. Can you speak a bit louder?
Yeah,
yeah, sorry. You just have to speak really loud.
Gotcha. So I was just thinking, what is well, I think first and foremost, this role is representative of what the students at Cornell want. And I think there's a clear distinction between university collaborators and student collaborators, if that makes sense. So I think, as Joe mentioned last week, one of the big initiatives that I think ubiquitously Cornell as an institution and students at Cornell agree on is financial aid and issues around that. So, for example, the university lobby initiatives for both the state and the federal government, they have a specific day where they go and talk about Pell Grants and talk about the federal government policies. So I think that's a unique opportunity to incorporate students more into that data. Another example is in terms of land grant institutions, so we're in a unique position where we're a land grant institution, but there's a lot of divide, a lot of change happening on that realm. So I think those are two big areas of opportunities for this position to make a difference. But going back to my first point, this is a position that I see is representative of what students want, and they don't need that option to specific topics.
Thank you.
Anyone else? There's been a motion to vote. There's been a second. All in favor of any dissent? No, sorry, it's out of dissent. You're just ready to vote for it. I feel you. all in favor of confirming Adi, please raise your hand or placard. All opposed. All abstaining. By a vote of 24, you're abstaining. Okay, by a vote of 24 to 0-2. Audience confirmed. Welcome to the club. We'll be moving into approval of minutes from the November 14th meeting. Also, in the resolution 14, both of you have been approved. Both you and Liel are now ex officio members of the executive committee. So you don't have to sit in the audience. You're welcome to sit up at the executive committee table if you're so inclined. there's space on this side. Yeah. Uche Gavin's got to get a little closer to us. Yep. No. So we're moving into approval of the minutes from the November 14th meeting. Any questions, comments, amendments to the minutes?
Motion to approve.
There's been a motion to approve. There's been a second. All in favor of approving the minutes, please raise your hand or placard.
24-0-2.
All opposed. All abstaining. By a vote of 24-0-2, this action minutes have been approved.
We're now going to move to open microphone. If any members of the community have something to say, please come to the center of the table in the middle. We're going to close the microphone.
Mariah, your violin reports. Do them from the table. Yep. No, they're one after the other. For reference, the class councils and senior days ones are in the far back of the packet, while the other ones are in like the beginning portion. So if you just need some wayfinding in the packet, I know this one is dense.
Okay, so start with the three from this week. Some of the district hall students to the union board was at 50 cents and requested 75 cents, and the committee voted to fund them at 50 cents due to large surpluses. I'm pretty sure it was about 35K, which is like almost triple, four times their rate of disbursement, which we were just like, we don't feel that you need any more money because you're already operating on like a $1,000 times the 50 cents that you currently get. And so
Yes, and so that's why we increased the increase. But yeah, so that's the great things.
Any questions? Oh, I had one person on the speakers list. Anyone else want to be on it real quick? Nope. Brian.
Nathan Johnson. If we could just get a little bit more out, it seems like there was a fairly even split-ish of people that wanted to farm at 75 and people that did not. If anyone on Axon should care to share why they waited in either way, that would be great. If not, I don't know.
If any member wants to, you can. If you don't, you don't have to. It's a secret ballot for a reason. Or it's a secret ballot in AFSCOM. Or Mariah, if you want to provide context to the conversation.
Yeah, stuff does great things, but it wasn't malicious in nature to not give them 75 cents or anything of the sort. And so, yeah, there was a lot of, there were good things that got stuff, it was just a matter of the fact that like $35,000 when you receive $7,000 a year is a lot of, there's a lot of surplus money that can be spent down in definitely 2 years. And so, yeah, I think that was why it's a little bit there.
Anyone else? Questions, comments? Seeing none, the chair would look for a motion to approve. There's been a motion approved. There's been a second. All in favor of giving Willard Trade Hall Student Union Board of Directors 50 cents in the allocation, please raise your hands with placards. All opposed. All abstaining. By a vote of 24 to 0 to 2, they've been given 50 cents. Moving on to Welcome Weekend.
So, Welcome Weekend was in a very similar situation where they also had, say, $30,000 to $40,000 exposure. I think just from the nature of the event that they put on, I mean, it cost that much money. I mean, it seems kind of like that from their budget. And so, that was a very similar situation. They formed similar functions to sub. Yeah, they have the same advisor as well, and so they do put on like, similar types of programming, which is, I think, why we saw some of the surplus across the two organizations.
Any questions or comments? See my photographer right there. Ruining his shot. Seeing no questions or comments, the chair. Oh, Masa, sorry. Too busy focusing on myself.
So, my question is if you said that they have the same similar budget, why did the committee decide that that's like Celine and not Celine?
Sub has the same advisor as Welcome Weekend.
Oh, well, I switched one last time. I was doing Welcome Weekend. I just realized that the CP was using those. Yes, I'm sorry.
Okay. That was my fault. Any questions or comments on Welcome Weekend?
Motion to approve.
There's been a motion to approve. Seeing no sense, we'll move into voting. All in favor of giving Welcome Weekend $2.40, please raise your hands. All opposed. All abstaining. By a vote of 24 to 0 to 2, Welcome Weekend has been given $2.40. I missed it. I thought it was double sided. Oops. We're on CUPD.
Okay, yes. So CUPD is at $8.55. They wanted to pay $13.55 after this date was unanimous. They bring speakers to campus and they were wanting to bring bigger speakers. And they weren't able to do that with the $8.55 that they were selling. And so, yeah, we want to see, everyone likes to see like the big request and the personalities. And so, yeah.
I'm taking the speaker's list. Someone I have is Tomas.
Just wondering if they mentioned anywhere in the presentation, like maybe more diverse speakers. Was that a joke?
I do know the one thing that they mentioned to me when I met with them, like one-on-one, was that like a lot of minority artists, well, I guess not artists, more but speakers.
sectors, specifically women, often in charge of them anymore. And so that was another one of their things that like, a lot of people want to see, like, Beyonce or something to assume that it's Beyonce, but it's just not in the budget, right? And so, yeah.
Anyone else? Seeing, oh, Army. You want a motion to approve? There's been a motion to approve. There's been a second. All in favor of giving CUPB $13.55, please raise your hand or placard. All opposed, all abstaining. By a vote of 24-0-2, CUPB has been given $13.55. Now on to class councils. Questions or comments for Mariah? There's been a motion. There's a second. All in favor of giving class councils $2.35. All opposed. All abstaining. By a vote of 23-0-3, this class council has been given $2.35. Next, days.
Yeah, so I certainly was not at that meeting, but I did want to look at the senior day's application, and the takeaway I had from that was that if they received less funding than they hoped for, they would just be a reduction in availability of free events, not taking events. So my impression from that was that a reduction in funding from what they had asked for would have no impact on the events that seem to be free, but would have my inclination is to provide as much funding as they requested, given that the sort of impact of this additional funding is to make more tickets available to students that are not able to afford willing to spend that money on those ticket events and those events that cost money. And I know that some of the student events do go at their price. So my inclination is to overturn this, but I would be interested in hearing some of the people's thoughts on this issue.
Yeah, you can respond. I have Moss on the speaker's list. Other people want to be on the speaker's list, please raise your hand.
Yeah, so I hear exactly what you're saying.
Great. Masa.
I think I would choose, I mean, I don't know how much of the application you saw, but I would choose to create a budget, like some things on the budget, but not others. And that's why the committee did not feel comfortable with the budget, because the
amount is because we don't know how this is going to be. And if it is going to go back to the community tickets, then yes, 100% be in that. But we just did not see that, like, just like.
Yeah, I was just going to say, just as a point of information, that in our business speed, they're only required to use 90% of their allocation on free events. So they actually don't have to spend, they could spend up to 10% of the $5.10 on ticket events actually. So, yeah, just something to think about.
I have Brian again.
Yeah, I lots of definitely, I think. As a completely valid point, and I respect that. That said, I don't see any reason to distrust, not trust senior games. Like, I think if there's going to try to give more, tickets to free events, I would hope that they thought through on that. If they don't, then that's an issue that I think should be taken up. Either through, I guess we can't really buy them through Appendix B if they're following the Appendix B violations, but then I guess that's an issue that should be taken to the group. But my point is to, for the extra 80 cents that this costs, half of what else fees, yet we provide a fair amount of additional funding to senior days and allow them to get tickets to free events. My inclination is, let's give them the money because this is sort of being the last week on campus. Let's make it as real as we possibly can. For the 80 cents, that's
what. Is that a formal motion to overturn?
Yes.
So there's been a motion to overturn Appropriations Committee's decision. It has to be overturned by the Assembly with a 2/3 vote. Is there a second to this motion? That's a second? Is there any dissent to the motion? I'm seeing dissent. I saw Uche first. Uche, can you just explain the dissent? And then we'll go into a vote to vote.
So I think it's really important to understand that to respect certain set of people in the Appropriations Committee make their decisions, especially because we are the ones who look very closely at those budgets, we sit with those three, and agree to understand what we're doing and what we're talking about. Especially because there's some people who have not seen the budgets before, it's kind of an all-of-it unit that some of our questions are going to their decisions.
Thank you. Is there a withdrawal of the second or the motion? Seeing obviously no withdrawal of it, we're going to go into voting. So the vote to vote needs to pass by a majority vote of Assembly members, and then we're going, and if that succeeds, we'll go into the formal vote to overturn. So, not a vote to vote. A vote to vote is just a majority. The vote to overturn is a 2/3 majority. Yes. It is. It's a 2/3 vote. The vote to vote?
Because the vote to vote grant was successful as a majority as well as that.
Oh, shoot the boot. I shouldn't have. That was. Yes, you're right. Oh, boy. So, yeah, so it's 2/3, 2/3. Okay, so all in favor of entering to voting on the motion to overturn, please raise your hand or placard. This is a vote to vote. That is correct. So, if you don't even want to entertain the motion, you would be more behooved by voting no. Or if you want to entertain the overturning. Okay. Everyone understand what we're voting on? Yes, yes, yes. Okay. All in favor of voting to vote, please raise your hand or placard. Tomas, is that a hand? Okay. All opposed? And all abstaining. By a vote of 10 to 12 to 4, the vote to vote fails. That means we're not going into the motion to overturn. So, Brian, you're welcome to make a motion until there is a motion to formally approve this, but I have no sign of speaker's list. There's been a motion. There's a second. All in favor of approving senior days at the level that is recommended, which is $5.10, please raise your hand or placard. All opposed? All abstaining? Yep, math works. By a vote of 19-2-3, senior days has been given $5.10. Moving on to, yes. Yep. We only have 3 more orgs to see. Perfect. So now we'll be moving into the business of the day. So I'm going to request the assembly move resolution 18 above the public statement just because our community partner is here. Can I get a motion? Can I get so moved? It's been so moved. There's been a second. I'm going to assume the assembly says yes. So, Cornell, one of the bids, you would be the conference host for IBG, which is the largest inter-IB, IB Plus, first-generation college student conference in the country. I'm going to go around the IB booths as Cornell's host. They came to the student assembly, and the executive committee approved a $10,000 special project request to the conference. And we thought it was a really wonderful idea to receive this moment for Cornell, and the student assembly should be a part of that, and making sure that we are supporting all first-generation college students, no matter at what institution. And so this was something really important to us, and I'll get to Natalia, who is co-chair of the conference, and I'll write it.
So I don't have much to say, I guess, from Joseph, but if y'all have any questions about IBG, essentially it's not just for first-generation students, but also new students, because it's really going to be tied to each other. But really, it's a space to celebrate our identity as first-generation students and bringing new students the resources that they need to thrive, not only while their parents' institution or any other institution that they're part of, but really beyond, because the first generation they just carry into a lot of life after college. The $10,000 will mostly be going to speakers, which we are trying to get, the more money we have, the more speakers we can get, and a lot of different conferences for statistical things, but honestly, I didn't know how expensive conferences were, and so I started getting this. So, it's my little blurb.
Thank you, Natalia. If you guys have any questions or comments, please raise your hand. Here, though. Anyone else? Okay. Okay, go for here, Walter.
I just wanted to thank you for your efforts in strengthening and also wish you and whoever else is planning this really, really, really massive project on the best of luck.
Thank you.
The other co-chair is Elliot Morelos, who couldn't be here today, but she's
using it for I want part or something.
I also want to just shout out my committee because I know there's limits on this and they want them to think. But yeah, it might be possible without the committee as well. It's like we're co-chairs, but the amount of work that goes into this is beyond anything two people can do.
Okay. Are they? My private mic.
So,
sure. Yes. Thank you. Masa? Was that a motion to move it to this for the day? It was? Okay. Second? Any dissent? Okay. All in favor? Okay. 20-0-1 passes. We still have
to go on. Did Joe?
Joe, did you not vote?
I voted.
20-0-2. Okay. We still have to go on the speaker's list. Masa. Okay.
Motion to
vote. Second. Is any dissent? Okay. Cool. These are not dissents, right? Cool. Okay. All in favor? Yay. 20-0-2
We'll be moving into the public statement in regards to Syracuse University. Again, for the assembly members, the updated statement is on the sheet of paper not connected to the packet. So take some time, read it over, and raise your hand if you want to ask a question or two to Kat and Colin. But Kat and Colin, you can explain the stuff.
So there are numerous outbreaks that have occurred since November 7th. There's been a mass outbreak of racially and biologically charged incidents at Syracuse University. These are taking the form of swastikas that have been drawn in snow outside different halls. There's been just graffiti put up. There have been racial slurs at other students. It's just been really bad. So we're hoping to issue this statement of support and solidarity for the communities that are affected by this.
Questions?
Do I have questions or comments? Which one do you want to be on? It's not a resolution, so it doesn't have to be moved to the business of the day. So we can just vote on it. There's been a motion to vote. There's been a second. All in favor of posting the statement, please raise your hand or placard. All opposed, all abstaining. By a vote of 20-0-2, the public statement will be posted. Thank you, Kat and Colin, for all your hard work. Next, we have Resolution 19. What?
Really quick, I move that we move Resolution 22 F to the next. I have a guest here, Nancy.
Okay, wonderful. Can I get there's been a second? Any dissent? Seeing no dissent, we'll move it. So we'll be considering Resolution 22 now. Yep. That's what I thought. So Kat and Mariah, invited guests. Sorry, I don't know your name.
Yes, this is Kyra. Kyra is the president of PROM, one of the Cornell Law Group. So Resolution number 22 seeks to create a system for registering inclusion events and inform living houses that provide similar protections and university support as events in Greek houses. As it stands right now, the law begins at Cornell, which are 8 of them, which house around 200
students, which can include social events, educational events, etc., without fear of transportation to the university.
That all you want to do it? Any other comments? Okay, wonderful. Any questions for Gavin and responses? I have first Nick. Brian, if you can pass the microphone to Nick.
Hi, thank you for writing this. So why before us? Like, I'm going to guess you guys have come to the institution before, but I'm going to get comments about why they just consider a lot of advice about this.
Yeah, so we have gone to the administration and asked about holding various events in our house. They said that the cap of 49 people was at any cooperative event was due to our code, and it's not related to the actual space, but the towns and egress that are available. But to me personally, that doesn't really make sense because the houses all have different sizes and houses of egress. They just put more earth on all of the blocks. For example, some of the blocks are as small as 10 people actually living there. My block, which is the largest, is 34 residents, which means that it has 49 people in the house at any time. Even if people, all of our house members are in their respective rooms, means that they all have a bed of 15 and have certain people in their house, which means effectively that we can't have a bed center in the public because that's so small. In terms of alcohol, I don't exactly know why we are not allowed to host events that have alcohol. For people who are like different communities and sororities are. I don't know, because we need to say the answer to that. I'm just told that we can't control like who is over 21 and who is under 21, which I feel like we could do in a very similar to the identities where people have to have safe sport fans that are just person.
Thank you. Jacob Fike.
Yes, so Nick just asked me a question. But so I think I would take this time just to say that I think that this is some great work. I think it's honestly preposterous that the policy that's currently in place is that it honestly didn't even occur to me as somebody who's not directly affiliated with co-op, like, but I know that co-ops offer a tremendous benefit to those who are involved, and they add tremendous value to our campus and our community. And so I thank you guys all for putting the work to make sure that these policies can be overturned so we can all have a safe space and a space for us to better ourselves. So thank you.
Quickly add on to that, if you reference my 20 and 21, we aren't even allowed to host events that do build to our maximum capacity. So my cooperative currently has 24 residents, we want to hold an event with 49 at our maximum capacity, we still cannot register that event. So the fire department still doesn't. So thank you so much for your support.
Of course, they did. If I'm not mistaken, this also prevents speakers from coming as well, right? Which is also simply mind-boggling. So.
For example, Waterfront, one of the cooperatives, back in the day, called Mount Pence as a speaker. So co-ops have a very rich history of having speakers on campus, which we know all about the host. The easy thing.
Thank you. I have Masa. He passed the mic.
Okay, so my question is, how is the system going to be in place if it's going to be regulated?
So, maybe a system, or a registry system, much like the Greek system that is set up right now for fraternities. So, that is done by authors of Greek life up on the 6th floor. So, we have the office of off-campus living. So it would be facilitated. And the benefit also which I listed here is that you can
you put down your contact information, how many people are there, because this is also based on fire safety and first responders, and things like that, you can put your party information, et cetera. You can contact people.
All right. There's been a motion to move to business today. There's a second. All in favor, please. I assume that there's no dissent. Okay. Resolution 22 has been moved into business today. I have a motion to vote. Is there dissent? Seeing no dissent. There's a second. I saw it. So all in favor of approving Resolution 22, please raise your hand on the placard. Okay. All opposed. All abstaining. By a vote of 25-0-1, this resolution has been passed. Congratulations. Moving down the agenda, we'll move into Nick's resolution, which number is escaping me. 19. That one I already finished, yeah.
Oh, cool.
So, Nick, go for it.
I'm going to ask that everyone takes 5 minutes to read through this, think about it, also look at the timeline and set the sound channel.
Thank you. Just look at me when you're finished reading. I feel like a teacher saying that. Just put your eyes up when you're finished reading. Pencils down, eyes up.
Can you please shut up?
No, we're doing business.
Sorry.
Okay, let's do it. Mariah.
So I think that this looks really good. I think my only concern is so the lines 30-35. If there is
something really wild that somebody wants to discuss. I guess I'm wondering, not letting me. So I understand the topic of like our personal collections, I do, but I guess I don't understand why I would identify the person who's making like a negative statement. I guess, yeah, can you just kind of maybe talk about your thought process and like why you want to protect somebody who is making a claim that is negative? Like, for what reason was that?
I think this is to be made so that people who maybe have had experiences with this individual are protected. I think this is more along the lines that people who really do have impactful statements to be made about an individual feel comfortable in sharing that and have a space to do that. And I think also it's really important that this establishes that we have individuals in our organization that can be turned to, that can talk to, and interacting with our leaders should be our leaders, they should be individuals who should feel comfortable and be able to have these conversations.
Yep.
And then my other question was so the working practice is Joe read all the comments that were submitted, and I was wondering if we could add that, like, even after Prez and Parliamentarian read through it, that like the person submitted the comment needs to be, I guess it was just like awkward to just hear like read through the 20 comments, and like not hear who they were coming from.
Okay, so so I think rule 7-2, so we should change that to so following the candidate's speeches, each individual will be allowed their approved names. Okay. Show of hands, how many people have been with that?
There, this isn't in business of the day, so formal amendments aren't allowed to be made.
Well, can I see like a straw poll or something?
Yeah, you can do a straw poll.
Yeah, it's a straw poll. How many people like that idea?
What? Can you restate the idea?
So,
oh, so my idea is just that, like, once Joe or the president and parliamentarian approved the comments, people would just be called on to speak their comment instead of Joe reading everyone's comments for them. And so the rule 7-2 would just be like, follow all the candidate speeches, like, the president will call on each person who submitted a claim that was approved. Instead of, I just want to know where the comments are coming from, and I don't think that that's necessarily a negative thing once they've already been approved. I don't know why we need to hear them all from Joe instead of hearing them from whoever wanted to say.
So, straw poll on that. Who would like that? So, like, what would happen is, like, I approve the comment, or, like, whoever the group is, we approve the comment, and then we're like, Morgan, you're allowed to read your comment.
Okay, just
yeah, that's what it would be.
As opposed to, basically,
it's kind of a candidate instead of a person. But what I'm saying is that why do we want anonymous comments? Like, especially if they are getting approved by three folks, and the comments have already been deemed appropriate, why do we not want to say that? If you submitted a comment. Like, I guess I'm just, yeah, I guess I'm just a question for everyone. So, when does up until now, we all send our comments out loud without even getting approved?
Is it a point of information?
Yeah.
Okay, I can use the microphone.
What was, like, so the way you did it last week?
Yep.
Why did you do it that way?
That was just a test run, knowing that this was something coming to the floor. We wanted to see how the assembly reacted. What Mariah is stating is that necessarily, I don't know if you were here, right?
Yeah.
She didn't like the fact that I was the one, or like the person in the group was reading all the comments. She would have preferred that individual who wrote that comment to make that comment. So that's what Mariah is proposing to be the change, instead of just like the president going down the list and reading all 20 plus comments.
So it's like, it's not so that it's anonymous.
Yeah, it's personal. You know which individual is making the comment. Yeah. That's the crux. So we did a straw poll, and Nick, did you get the count? Thank you. Moving down the speakers list, Masa.
How
long
does it
apply
to our screen that we need to and then my next question, sorry, I have two questions. My next, that's my first one. That's my first one. My second one would be, can we, when, after questions, we can be able to talk again?
So to answer both for the first one, I hope to address that in Rule 10. So the same idea is that the following people are elected, the same idea like a week before, we do that huge mass election, and the whole positions can know. I mean, we're never going to do that for some positions, so I think it also makes people aware the positions are not going to be filled, not being filled, and in that case, we just say that again, but I think that's really the process. For the second one, for Rule 7.3, that's kind of the idea for the 50 minutes of deliberation. That's just like a time I propose. I don't really care. My idea is just that, for the most part, I feel like people have found their things out, and it's often an opportunity that a change of mind has occurred, or people want to add additional things. Like, that's an opportunity. So.
Thank you.
I have Brian.
Yeah, so, Nick, thanks for putting this together for me. That's something that I sent you as well. I guess my concern comes with the fact that statements, that there is a possibility that the parliamentarian, the president, and the EVP vehemently disagree with the statement made by a member of the assembly. And as we are all elected members of the assembly, we all have. That, I think we all have rights to say what needs to be said and what needs to be said. Preventing that harm from attacks is absolutely really important. But I do think that we should not be putting into something that could in the future become very problematic. You have a president and EVP and parliamentarians that are all very close, they're all very much on one side, particular issue would feel very strongly on a particular candidate, but there are members of the assembly that also do feel very strongly in the opposite way. I worry that those voices may be muffled or hindered or prevented from kind of joining. So I do, I don't love this idea of a group of group people has the ability to prevent someone's voice from being heard. I really think it should.
Nick, I'll give you a chance to respond.
So, just my opinion. Totally agree with you. Obviously, this is a halter possibility of ideas. My thought process going through this is that, claim that should be submitted for a person should be rejected. That's just like a process of ensuring that people aren't just going to be doing that on the text. For the most part, I think at the end of the day, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say it at all. That's just me. The point of the process where you submit a claim that's really negative to someone, that's supposedly a signal of a conversation between the senator and the parliamentarian, the president, in order to determine how to respond. So if an individual, for example, has been saying that a verbal altercation has been submitted, it is a senator's ability to notify this to these individuals and then for them as a team to determine what's the best solution for this, like how should we proceed, any of the steps. I think it's also just creating more streamlined processes about that type of
situation. Sure.
I totally understand that. The other thing that I also worry about is, especially with the negative submission form, right? So it is very, very possible, very reasonable that there could be a not so great power dynamic between the EDP, president, parliamentarian, and the person who's sitting. They may not feel comfortable submitting that claim, but it may be something that they would rather just say to the assembly and not need someone to say, well, we don't want to do something like that. I just worry about the future implications of this. So I trust, the current team, the current staff, I don't think that's going to be an issue. But I do worry that there may be times when, if the composition of this assembly is different, there might be people that are prevented from saying things that they feel need to be said because they are at odds with, three people in charge. I just don't love that concept of, having things being moderated by three people who always formulated their differences.
Okay. Okay. Mariah, I'll put you on the second one. So again, so being conscious of time, it is 6:20. The agenda's into 6:30. I have a lot of people on the speakers list for this, so I want to get through this, and we have a lot of other resolutions we need to get to. So I'm going to ask the assembly to move to extend the meeting till 7 p.m. There's been a motion to extend. There's a second. Any dissent? Seeing no dissent, the meeting has been extended till 7. If you need to leave for any purpose, obviously I understand. Feel free to leave. Past the 6:30 mark, so I understand that. So the next person I have is Ozai. Thank you. Ian.
Thank you. This is really great, and I think this works really well for kind of internal elections throughout the year. My one concern is in the spring, right after elections, before the assembly really is necessarily formed, which is when the vast majority of internally elected positions are filled. And if you've been there, like, which you have. you know that a lot of them are like, hey, we have this random liaison to this committee. Does anyone want to fill it? And so I'm kind of afraid that if you follow kind of a really formalized process for that, you'd end up with a lot of positions that have no one wanting or ready to fill them. So, I mean, I would look favorably upon language that kind of excludes that one meaning, perhaps, or... Yeah.
Do you want to respond or keep going?
Let's just...
Okay, John.
So first of all, I'd like to really thank you for this resolution. I do think, just responding to some earlier comments that were made, I do think that it's very important that people not just based on the fact that I know from my personal experience coming out of the meeting after we tried that, mm-hmm. I felt great. I felt like I had a detox. And we take it away. People have personal attacks and people thinking, well, that person just trying to go after you. All the comments are really insightful and it really gives you a sort of protection to speak your mind. Because let's say someone's your friend, but you have a really valid critique, you don't have to worry about that person that you know, try to mess up my chances, because you can speak your mind, and I think anonymity really helps with that. And I think when you say that I need to face to know who this person is, I think it gets into a realm. I'm not trying to outright condemn that idea, but it gets to a realm where it's like, I need to face my views. And I don't think that should be an attitude that we should really have in these elections. And I think anonymity really made it so I can really appreciate everyone's comments in the room. And I really felt bad walking out of that executive meeting than any other time. It's the same amount of
Thank you. Kat.
Oh, I yield.
Kirabel.
I have a question about the... Oh, I have a question about John's So we're only allowed to see positive comments about a certain candidate?
I mean, in theory, all of our executive sessions, you were supposed to say positive comments about the candidate you support. In practice, I've seen it opposite. But I'll let Nick respond because he's the one setting up the formal language. Yeah, so Nick, do you want to answer?
So I think that just idea of fondness is that there's critiques and then there's negative comments. And I think sometimes we have a hard time differentiating between someone's just basic ability to run a committee and then qualities that really don't reflect our organization. So I think the idea is that if you really do have something that you think is inappropriate about this individual, such as the China Environmental Committee and environmentalists, submit it. I think that's one like very big example, just think of others. But I think this is just supposed to help weed out some of the complex things that we had to make the conversation.
So like so you're teaching the example like, oh, this person is just very difficult to know. Or this person just doesn't do the work that they say that they want to do or they're late to this or that or things like that acceptable?
So I would say yes, but it would have to be with like substantial evidence. So like say the person is difficult to work with, I would say like submit that with like multiple examples of like documented or like visible instances in which that occurs. So I think more ideas can also kind of click on what they like this here. Say like, oh, I've heard this individual has been like really creepy towards others. So fair, definitely like the conversation we had, but I think there's a time and place for that, and it's not to be had for people that have spent a couple hours of talking with.
So those were the critiques that with those also
everything is going to be submitted in that. And I think also this kind of creates, so yes, there's like the potential of getting to empower certain individuals. I also think that this is like a form of accountability in which that the president and we are supposed to be like the top people in our field. I think we do expect a lot from them. And I think there's definitely some stress that comes with that. But at the same time, I am hoping positive conversations come from this.
But but the critiques will be heard by them.
Oh, so as long as the... So also, like, when you submit it, you're going to have a conversation with them about why you think it's appropriate, and if they think it's appropriate, you'll be able to say it.
Okay.
I'm going to have the... There are people I'm going to go to. You're welcome to go on the second speaker's list. Tomas.
Yeah, I like this in theory, but I do have concerns about comments being needed to be approved because... Yeah, this is the makeup of essay we have right now that doesn't necessarily mean that's going to be making it in 5 years. And if I know someone, for example, is transphobic, and the people who are in those exact positions are not trans allies, and they decide that my comments shouldn't be said to be like someone's reputation, suddenly that's not voice. So I have some issue with like that power dynamic is why I'm said, because it can hurt my own voices and. So, I don't know how we're going about doing that, but the idea that like any comments need to be approved by the team members under something is an issue.
Do you want to respond, or can I start giving you one? Two people, you respond. Two people, you respond.
Two.
Okay, thank you. Sarah.
Thank you.
Thank you. Noah.
I just have a question about
yes. So definitely something is to be aware. For this one, I just thought this is supposed to be just I think it would be interesting to see and show. Like I think for me, this demonstrates like how much of a position. Like if you're willing to take your time out of your way to meet with individuals, especially in a position, I guess I kind of at least I think it has to be her, and it also kind of shows that like we're doing our work process. And, like, it was just like.
Okay, and do you want to respond to Tomas?
So, totally agree. I definitely think, like, along with yourself and other people, it's definitely brought up. And I've been kind of trying to think about suggestions. One, should we increase it to the alternate keyboard? Two, should we just submit the claims in the alternate and release all at once? Like, I guess I definitely agree this is definitely really nuanced. I'm just, and this is definitely not a perfect solution. So, definitely open to other ideas if you have them.
I would say maybe like a field process that would then involve a few people, but again, still rely on the composition.
Yeah.
I'll just provide historic clarification. Opening up the process to the full exec, I wouldn't say alleviate those concerns. I mean, I've seen my time assemblies where I would be, like when I was a member, not on the executive committee, I had felt that way of being like, I couldn't say anything in that space because I know the executive committee fundamentally disagrees with my viewpoint when I do want people. And I think that also leads to a question of when we elect the executive committee, as Ian brought up, so I also want to make sure that is always inserted into the conversation when we're still electing out the rest of the executive committee, because we only come in with two of us. And we don't even have the parliamentarian at the beginning of everything. So just want to put those points out there, just from my historic knowledge. Next, I have RMA.
So I've been in this conversation, I'll probably ask the table just because I think two conversations at least have to be had in terms of some type of assurance about the claim submitted and about the
Okay. Jacob Light. Yield Salamina.
Very quickly, just logistically, I remember last year when we were doing the internal election at the end of the school year for next year's position. So for room 7, I just want to maybe have it like up to 3 minutes. Because if everyone has 3 minutes, that will be an entire day's election process.
Okay, so I'll write that down and I'll always put something on the slide for commenting about
the motion to table. I have one person left on the first speaker's list, so if that individual speak and then thank you. Gavin.
To echo Tomas's concerns, I think that sometimes we as a committee approach it upon validity. I think that this can be negative, but also I think that this can be positive. I think that in this concern, this is negative. For example, if someone was to write a comment, oh, well, this person really works with diversity and inclusion on campus, there are certain members of the essay that I would trust based on like their identities and like their chosen actions on campus to qualifying that rather than just submitting that as a comment. So I think that having credibility is a person is important. That's why I think that just having it.
So that was all the individuals on the first speakers list. There's been a motion. Yeah, Nick.
Can I just
even round it out?
Yeah, okay. So definitely agree. I definitely think going forward and everyone's up to be that when things are read, the negative ones, still, but I think the positive things that we need to do is definitely agree with you. There's some reasons why that was closest, and I think those are the reasons we should have been I think the two conversation pieces that need to be worked out is making sure that if there is a potential for a couple of members in the future that are not adding, how we go about that. And the second thing is really about the relationship. So, should I send this out? Then we will form this slack and kind of comment on it. And then I'll present those ideas in the next meeting, or what should we do?
Yeah, I mean, put something in the slack. You know, obviously there are two, there's the one major point of anonymity, and then ask, like, you can straw poll that, then ask for comments, and then the other big issue I think I saw was kind of just, like, who should be that person, who should be the people deciding comments, if they should be read aloud X, Y, Z, and how's that process determined, and is there an appeals process? I think that could be a long response given to the assembly, and so we can get some of the feedback early on, and so, like, we need to adjust language. You can come to the exec committee meeting the Tuesday after Thanksgiving break, and we can kind of sort through that, and we can certainly invite the poll. I mean, obviously, all of our executive committee meetings are open to the public period, so come, we'll discuss this there to, like, any changes in understanding the data. Sure.
So,
can you use the microphone?
Yeah.
Thank you.
And there's something to consider, and if you have to happen, is that the person that's going to be nominated is going to be already, like, the nomination would be, sorry, like, the person would have the position by the time that the people would have.
No. It would be like, I appeal the decision on the comment. How does that appeals process work where that individual still might be outside of the room who's still running for the position? Yep. So that's it. So do that to the doc and we'll put it in the Slack and we'll reconvene. But thank you so much. There's been a motion to table. Can I get a second?
Okay.
Is there any dissent? All in favor of tabling? Clear. The motion clearly passes. So we'll move on to Resolution 20. Thank you so much, Nick.
Oh,
Go for it.
Hi, everyone. So, this is a resolution that is coming out of the course of the semester. It's about the exact some special projects. We've run into a couple of different issues with people applying for the coming out of the class. Just a couple of things that I really didn't agree with. So, this is just to set some basic guidelines to practice that will go into practice next semester.
Anyone want any questions or comments? Masa.
Our conferences are considered recurring events. They happen once a year.
What
was that? Would a conference be considered a recurring event? They happen once a year.
It happens every year.
Yes. Because it's like, it occurs every year. If it's like an annual thing that, like, students plan for an event, they do probably should budget for it and not allow special projects.
Thank you.
Mariah.
So I just want to kind of make comments as a board. People don't really know when special projects are in the process works. It has been kind of an issue through this semester in particular with people applying for money after the they're even having, which kind of puts us in a position where we feel obligated to fund the organization or like their event because they're telling us, oh, we're $3,000 more holders, but we don't have money, we have debts that we need to pay. And so I think that it kind of makes it so that way our decision isn't really like our decision about the event itself and whether or not we think that it's deserving of such a kind of money, but more so just like feeling bad because people like took out money that they did not have. And so
thank you.
Fully support, just because like all of these rules that are listed have been things that like appropriations committee has kind of been following unofficially for like the past couple of years. Like these are like the unofficial precedents. It's just this they're being formalized for the first time. So this is making sense.
I have no one else on this speaker slip. I need a motion to move into business of the
day.
Is there any dissent to moving to business of the day? Seeing no dissent, this has been moved to business of the day. There's been a motion to vote. Is there a second? There's been a second. All in favor of approving Resolution 20, please raise your hand or placard. All opposed. All abstaining. By a vote of 20-0, this resolution passes. It will be incorporated into the standing rules for next semester. We'll be moving into Resolution 21, so that's Pat and Colin. So go ahead and introduce it.
Okay, so basically what this resolution does is it takes a section of special projects funding and puts it aside for diversity specific initiatives. So this would still be overseen by exec. They would operate with the recommendation of the diversity and inclusion committee.
Anyone want to be on the speaker's list?
Motion to move to business of the day.
There's been a motion. Do you want to be on the speaker's list, Kevin? Okay. Do you care if we move to business of the day? Okay. There's been a motion to move to business of the day. Is there a second? Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, this has been moved to the business of the day. I have Gavin on the speaker's list. Just real quick.
To amend the format so it's not sponsors, it's sponsored by that underline and it all go through the sponsors list and points it to the
John, you got that? Perfect. Is there a second to that amendment? Is there a second? Any dissent to the amendment? Seeing no dissent. So the name Jacob Youngblood.
I just had a question about the future funding for this sustainability of this funding. Is it just meant to be like a one time injection? I don't know. It feels like this is being established,
but it's just purely wrong. So that's a good question. So this year, as a one-time injection, just because we're going to like we're at the end of our budget cycle, I think in the future we're anticipating being able to work into our student assembly budget, which is approved by like biannually every 2 years. So that's what I think about like chances to see with the return be for the budget.
I have no one else on the speaker's list. There's been a motion to vote. There's been a second. Any dissent? Seeing no dissent, we'll move into voting. All in favor, please raise your hand or placard. All opposed? All abstaining? By a vote of 19-0, this resolution has been passed. Thank you. We'll be moving into the official business of the day. That was on the agenda, Resolution 17. This is OSI. Just for the assembly to know, we have 20 members. It's sparse, but that's still quorum for it. And because Resolution 17 contains bylaw amendments, this resolution functionally needs to be approved by a two-thirds vote of the current membership sitting right here, just to give you context.
I hope you guys have okay. I hope you guys had a chance to look at the updated
Feel free to take out your laptops or your phones to look at the proposed amendments. In order for those amendments to be considered onto the resolution, there needs to be a formal motion to amend to put those in the resolution document itself.
So, one of the things that I want to mention, I just want to like, apologize to those who that I was being rude or dismissive of people's concerns last week. I mean, I don't present that many resolutions. Pro-members, I'm here today not just to propose /electronic voting, but rather to change the culture of the essay and react to anyone to correct the vote. I understand this is not a trivial change, and as such, must be subject to full scrutiny and debate by the assembly. Over the last few days, I've received feedback from many members about my implementation of the iPad news, or electronic voting, or how we do electronic politics, and how it may improve, which I wholeheartedly appreciate. I have used the feedback given to me to update my resolution in more detail as to what is to be done in the event that SM wants to engage in other forms of voting and to better take the issues that I think is to resolve. I would like to take this time to address some of the feedback and criticism mentioned last time. First, about the cost. We can continue to rent iPads or other electronic device as we need a little bit at no charge to us and have a separate set of iPads for city balance also at no charge. I understand the idea of buying iPads now to be an option. In fact, the resolution does not require the SA to require, iPads in a specific way. Additionally, I received a lot of comments saying that okay, this would be too complicated for us to use practically, and I think there's a perception of like technology being like complicated and causing more trouble than it actually were. But I believe it's this
Just keep going.
Yeah. But this procedure is simpler than maybe like we think or would it be. So what would we do if this were to go through were to vote using my clicker by default. If a person if a member basically wants to make a motion to vote by a roll call or a clicker for a resolution, then that member would make that motion. And then we would just go to vote on whether we want to vote on resolution using roll call or platform. And once that passes, we would just vote using whatever voting person that person motion for. So I think as members, we must be able to learn procedures and strategies for the benefit of our constituents. Indeed, I have learned about the legislative process in the 5 weeks I spent on the idea, from initial concept to discussion with members to writing the resolution to debate and all of that, and finally to presentation before this. We had an opportunity to increase transparency elevate the bar for accountability of individual members, encourage independent voting, and improve cultural assembly. I understand this proposal may have to be taken further to the assembly plus more research on something, or maybe their entire members. That being said, I encourage members to ask questions, propose amendments, and vote.
Thank you. I have two people on the speakers list, three people on the speakers list. And I miscounted, we have 21 members, so 2/3 is 14. So that's the threshold. Armin, there's been a motion to table. Yeah, I'll have Colin explain why he wants to table.
We have a significant number of student assembly members missing right now, so I feel like it just needs more effective to put this off until the next meeting when everyone's present.
Can I just get a few comments from the
There's been a motion. It's been a motion. Is there just a mod we can do a senior dissent? What? Gavin also dissents. Unfortunately, no. We've explained it. But do you want to withdraw your motion, Colin? No. So we're in a vote to vote. It requires 2/3 in order to go into voting. All in favor of voting to vote on a motion to table, please raise your hand or placard.
6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11.
All opposed.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
All abstaining. It fails 11-7-1. I don't think I counted correctly. I missed a vote or see if someone was off. Oh, Masa, which way did you vote?
For me.
Tomas. Tomas gave Masa his proxy. Voted no. Okay. So that's
8.
Yeah, I think math works.
It just was wrong.
It failed.
I really have to take this because, there are many members of the assembly who are supportive or parents who are not here, and that would be fair for them to,
to the point.
Not include them in the conversation.
Thank you.
I think the good in between would be allow the three on the speaker list right now to give their comments to OSI so OSI can work with comments for the next week and then we table after.
Thank you. Temporary parliamentarian. So I have Marma A.
Thank you for bringing this time to respond to feedback.
Thank you, Masa. Can you pass on to one? Got one.
Oh, sorry, I just want to say thank you for all that work that you've been putting into this. We really appreciate it. But how will vote like if you move to vote by platform? How will that I think it's how will that be recorded?
Usually when we vote by platform, we just record the numbers, John puts the numbers into the minutes. So the numbers are always published regardless of what we decide to do. This would ensure that votes are tied to individual members so that constituents can see them. If we were to vote, no voting strategy is perfect. This is just another thing that we can use to lose 90% of the time. It would be more efficient than just voting by platform every time. But I do recognize that there are times where we really recommend to go by platform because we might have a resolution that wants to be present, or we might have some other reason. So that's that's there. But usually when we do look at collaborative tools, they'll let you get the quotes.
Thank you. I'm Noah.
Thank you.
I do understand what you're saying. I'm sorry. I do understand like what you're saying. That we would like, oh, well, this time we're going to use hyperviews, use social media anyway, but like on the day-to-day stuff, like these products I made, these are all for things like that. I can say with confidence that there are people who would be interested in seeing how those things would work, but they can't, but they don't have time to sit for 2 hours to try to make the same.
So how
do
we make
that happen? How do we make the media like that?
How do we make
it? So you don't have to do both, but like, we just have to add.
There's been a motion to table again. There's been a second. Is there dissent to tabling? Point of information. Can you use a microphone?
Yeah.
Thank you. So, yes, that would, because it's under the Section 9 electronic voting, so it would apply to the iClicker votes. Thank you for the point. So again, there was a motion to table, there was a second, is there dissent? Seeing no dissent, we're going to move into tabling. All in favor of tabling, please raise your hand or placard. All opposed, all abstaining. By a vote of 19-0-2, this resolution has been tabled to the meeting after Thanksgiving. There's been a motion to adjourn and dissent. Seeing no dissent, have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
This has been a production of Cornell University, on the web at cornell.edu.